with a high of 35. I'm Bob Barnum, and that is the latest from the WFAS Weather Center. The following is a paid program. The opinions expressed are solely those of the sponsor and not necessarily those of WFAS or its advertisers.
Peace of mind with Lippman Crooks.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Bernie Crooks, host of Peace of Mind with Bernie the Attorney. We're heard right here on WFAS AM 1230. Every Thursday evening from 6:05 to 6:35 p.m. And each week we bring you a different guest, somebody in the special needs community, somebody in the elder law community. And tonight we've got a real special treat. We've got a trifecta. I've got three lovely ladies here who are attorneys and educational advocates on the staff of student advocacy. And I'll introduce them to you. First one is Harriet Schleifer. Hello, Harriet.
Hello. Good evening, Bernie. How are you?
It's good to have you here. And we have Mary Ann Johnson. Hello, welcome.
Thank you, and thank you for having us on your show.
My pleasure. And Jean Lucchese, how are you?
Hi, Bernie. Thanks a lot for having us.
All right, it's my pleasure. And I guess, you know, we always start off the show with the first question being, what is it that you do? What is student advocacy, and why is it important?
Well, student advocacy is a nonprofit agency. We work with families to help resolve school issues. We are independent. We are not affiliated with any school district or with any other agency. Our staff includes seven advocates. Six of us are attorneys, and one is a non-attorney who has a lot of experience in advocating for children in school settings, especially in special education meetings.
So you're not for profit. So how do you operate? I mean, you guys are not volunteers, are you?
No. Okay. We do have some volunteers, but the seven people I just mentioned, we are all paid employees. We do have currently four part-time volunteers.
So where does your funding come from? Is it from the state or charitable contributions?
We have a lot of donations. We do fundraising. We have grants.
We will get monies from private grants. We are on contract with the youth bureaus, the Department of Developmental Disability Services, the DDSO.
And we actually do have some paying clients also, right, because we do charge on a sliding scale when it's appropriate.
If a person, we try very hard to fit everybody, whatever their income is, into one of our foundation requirements or a grant. But if they don't, then we would charge based on a sliding scale, based on family income and number of people in the
family. So are you a 501c3 organization?
Yes.
Okay, so your tax, any contributions would be tax deductible.
Correct.
That's right.
And you apply for grants each year. And are you subject to the cuts? I know we've heard about what's going on in Albany. Are you guys affected by that?
I hope we won't be, but the funding governmental offices that provides money may be subject to the cuts, and that may end up affecting us, of course.
So it's possible that there could be an impact on the services?
Absolutely. And we also, as I guess with every nonprofit, people may have more trouble giving, you know, because of their own economic situation.
Yeah, it's tough out there. Yeah. A lot of the charities we work with are saying it's just as tight as it was last year. So that's tough. All right. So, Mary Ann, you mentioned school issues. Give us an example of some of the different types of school issues that you guys deal with.
Well, we can divide. Most of our cases fall into one of three categories. So one would be getting into schools, registering issues, and one would be the discipline, behavioral issues, which present a lot of challenges, obviously, in a school setting. And the third, and it's probably the one that we have the most cases in, academic failure, and a lot of those end up in the special education system. I think 85% of our clients are children with special needs. And if you want an example of that, I think, Harriet, you had an example you wanted to talk about of how we would handle that type of case.
Correct. So we'll get a case referred to us, and with regard, let's say, to academic failure or even discipline, when we do represent students, I always request their educational records so that we can determine whether the student who's being disciplined may have some underlying special education needs. And we take the parents through the process. We'll meet with the parents. We'll meet with the child. Very important to get an eyeball on the child. And we will go over the records with them and determine whether if they are not already designated as a student eligible for special needs services, we help them through the process. And if they already are, we might talk about calling for another Committee on Special Education meeting to tweak the program for them, give them additional services, or maybe, you know, take out some unnecessary services. But, you know, one of the things that parents sometimes have a difficult understanding of, excuse me, is the least restrictive environment. And oftentimes, and especially in budgetary shortfalls, parents may think that schools are keeping students in the least restrictive environment or in the general education classroom because they don't want to spend the money on services. And then, of course, we explain to them that both under 504 and under the IDEA, the least restrictive environment is a federal and state mandate. And so we discuss the continuum of services that might be dictated depending on the student's need. The focus is always on the student's need and from a variety of sources of data.
Now, you mentioned 504. That's Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act of
1973.
Now, Marion, you mentioned 85% of the students are classified as special ed. Are the other 15% 504?
Not necessarily. We especially in registration and in suspension issues, we deal with the general ed population as well.
So if I give you an example, if one day a kid comes home from school and was there's a suspension notice because he hit another kid. Is that something you guys would handle?
Absolutely.
Yes, and we get a lot of calls for children who've been suspended. And sometimes we get a lot of calls from the same child who's been suspended. And, you know, sometimes when it's a recurring suspension over and over with the same child, that might sort of signal to us, you know, maybe there is some sort of underlying learning disability. Maybe the reason this child keeps getting in trouble at school is because he can't pay attention because there's a learning disability or there's
or
ADHD.
An emotional
disability. So that can sometimes a suspension might turn into us talking to the parent about getting him referred to the Committee on Special Ed.
Yeah, like what's causing the behavior.
Exactly.
Right. Now, is there a limit to how many times a child can be suspended?
How many times? Not exactly, but there's a very careful process that the school has to follow when they suspend a child who is on record as having a disability.
Or who may be a child that the district knew, presumed to be have a disability during the time that the behavior occurred. There's a presumption in some cases if you can prove that the school should have known, either because the parent made a referral or because the special ed director was given information by another school administrator and so forth. So they would get the protections of a child who's already classified.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, somebody who's a special ed student would have greater protections than a general population.
That's right, because, you know, maybe a child is suspended one day for hitting another kid, and they're going to be out for 3 days. And then a couple weeks later, they'll hit another kid. They're out for 4 days. And then 2 weeks later, they hit another kid. That's another 3 days. 10 days now has accumulated in suspensions, and that will trigger a special due process right that kids with an IEP or who are protected under the 504 area have this extra layer of due process that they're afforded, and it's called a manifestation determination.
It used to be called the nexus finding.
That's what I was thinking of. So yes. a child with an IEP can only be suspended for a total of 10 days in a school year before you get this due process right?
Well, you know, kind of. I mean, first, you know, once they're suspended for 10, there's more than one way to get to the manifestation. But one way to get there is if you have a series of these suspensions, and they're adding up to 10 days. And then they have a manifestation. So the committee who knows this child, they know what the needs are of this child, the demonstrated needs that are on record, and they look at it and they say, you know, is this person keeping on getting suspended? Is it a direct cause of the disability? In other words, let's say it's an emotional disability. It's on record that this child has a problem coping in social situations. And, gosh, because they have a problem coping in social situations, they keep hitting other kids and getting suspended. Yes, the disability is causing the behavior that's leading to the suspension.
So what does that mean? The child's allowed to do it, or they have to come up with another place to educate the child?
Well, they have to come up with the identified supports that, or a behavior intervention plan.
Right.
To assess why this is happening, to come up with hypotheses.
Maybe it's not his fault.
Well,
they're
that's the point. The point is
fault.
You don't want to penalize a child for their disability. So
that's what happens. They determine. So when they answer that question, is it a manifestation? They determine, yes, it is. Then they are not going to, you know, in most cases, there's not going to be a further suspension. We're going to look at the plan that's in place. We say, you know what, we need to add counseling another time a week.
Right.
We need to add, you know, maybe not a one-on-one aid, but something like that. Just
modify
more support.
The environment.
Modify the support for this child.
So that's why they call it a manifestation hearing, because the behavior is, they're trying to find out if the behavior is a manifestation
Correct.
Of the disability.
Right. Right.
And then a second prong to finding a manifestation determination would be if, in fact, the IEP was not implemented in an area that is directly related to the disability. So if counseling were part of the program, but the child was never getting counseling, and that was tied in to the student's behavior, it would be a manifestation finding.
All right, just quickly, we're going to have to take a break. This is Bernie Crooks, host of Peace of Mind with Bernie the Attorney. I'm speaking with Harry H. Schleifer, Mary Ann Johnson, and Gene Lucchese. Just quickly, give me a couple other examples. We talked about hitting or acting out in class. I mean, things that come to mind, drugs, other stuff. What are some of the other reasons why kids get suspended?
Well, a child would really be, you know, suspended. You're facing a really long-term suspension if you're caught with illegal drugs or controlled substance in school. I mean, every code of conduct across the state of New York contemplates potentially an entire school year suspension. If you're found guilty of something like that.
So if any child, even the general population, gets caught with marijuana or any illegal drug, it could be up to a year?
You can be up to a year. Of course, you know, we're going to still, you know, in the case of a special ed child, we're going to still have a manifestation determination.
Right.
For illegal drugs, it's going to be pretty hard to find a manifestation. You never know.
You never know. It could be self-medication for a depression.
It could be, but you have to argue it. You know, you need an attorney to go in there and say, just as Harriet said, you know, this person is self-medicating, and, you know, it may be a hard argument to make, but you might find a manifestation. In that case, with a special ed student, they would be out for 45 days instead of the whole year that a general education student is subject to.
Do they get home tutoring when they're out?
They do.
Okay. This is Bernie Crooks, host of Peace of Mind with Bernie the Attorney. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
Every parent worries about their kids. Unfortunately, when you have a child with disabilities, the worries are much greater.
Here's Bernie Crooks from the law firm of Littman Crooks.
Amy and Bruce had been talking about going to a lawyer to help them ever since Charlie was born. Charlie has cerebral palsy.
The experts at Littman Crooks helped Amy and Bruce set up a special needs trust to provide for Charlie's medical and financial needs for today and for the future.
The rules are very complex. You truly do need an expert to help you navigate through all the federal and state regulations to make sure that your child gets the benefits he or she is entitled to.
Do you have a child with special needs? Call the law offices of Littman Crooks.
We don't know what the future holds for Amy, Bruce, or their son Charlie, but what Amy and Bruce do know is that they've done everything in their power to ensure that Charlie has the best quality of life possible when Amy and Bruce are here and when they're not here.
Peace of mind.
Littman Crooks in White Plains, Manhattan, and Fishkill, or at littmancrooks.com.
Welcome back to the show. I'm your host, Bernie Crooks, from the law firm Littman Crooks. We're based right here in White Plains with offices in Fishkill and New York City. Or you can visit us online at littmancrooks.com. My guests this evening are Harriet Schleifer, Marianne Johnson, and Jean Lucchese. And we're talking about student advocacy. And before the break, we were talking about some special education issues. What other types of special ed issues are there?
Well, for example, there are parents who feel that their children aren't progressing. And
These are kids who are already classified?
No. I can speak about a parent who came to me after one of our training sessions, which we do. And she was very concerned about her child not making progress in third grade. She had been lagging behind for a couple of years now. And this woman happened to be originally from Poland. And the school took the position that this was an English as a second language issue and not a special education issue. And in my reading of the records, I felt that there was a great potential to have a learning disability. And so, I put the school to task, and they instituted some reading RTI, response to intervention programs. The students still did not make sufficient progress, and, I asked for a bilingual evaluation, which the child had had several years previous, but I wanted an update. It was time for that, and I was able to find the evaluator because the school's response to me was they couldn't find one, but I found this bilingual evaluator, and in fact the child was learning disabled both in her native Polish as well as English. That child was then classified as a student with a learning disability and started receiving direct reading instruction. Now, in this example, this is a child who remained in the general ed environment, in the least restrictive environment. But then we have some examples of kids who are in need of more restrictive environments. And what are those? So we start with our general ed environment with supports and services, if that can accomplish and lead the child to have a meaningful educational benefit, from their time in school. But sometimes we need a special class, a smaller class, a class where the curriculum is modified, where the assessments may be alternative assessments. We may then go to a school, a special school outside of the school district. And as you get farther away from the school district, from another public setting to a hospital-based setting perhaps, or even a private school on the state the state-approved list, either in-state or out-of-state, you start to get into your more restrictive environments. A residential setting would be a more restrictive environment. So,
does the school district push for that a lot?
No. The school district will go take the steps necessary, and that's why sometimes it's difficult for parents to get the services that they think they might need at the time that they're looking for those services, because it's data-driven. And sometimes it takes several meetings or several attempts to implement a service or a support. A one-on-one aid may be necessary before a school will determine that they can't educate the child in the home school district. They might need a therapeutic environment as opposed to a one-on-one aid. So the time may go by and the parent may be quite frustrated because the student is not making progress despite several rounds of different interventions, but it's data-driven.
So it might not happen as quickly as the parent would
want. That's correct. But this is ultimately for the protection of the student, because if you remember in the Forrest Gump movie, when Tom Hanks shows up and the school says, I'm sorry, we can't educate you, ma'am, and look what mom had to do. So this is for the protection of kids not being thrown out of the
regular... He ended up making more money than anybody in that class. So wait, is it true then that the school district is typically adversarial vis-a-vis the parent, or are they really working together?
Well, at Student Advocacy, we always take the approach that we partner with the school for the benefit of the student, and we try and educate our parents as to what the responsibilities of a school district really are. Sometimes they get wrong advice, and they have pie-in-the-sky ideas. And school districts are not responsible for giving you, as we all know from Rowley, a Cadillac as opposed to a Chevrolet. So as long as the student has an appropriate education to provide a meaningful benefit, the school district is satisfying their legal obligations to the students. On the other hand, I've had parents come to me and where the school district thinks the student should be in a more restrictive setting and have therapeutic services, for example, as opposed to staying in the regular ed classroom, I have parents who would rather that the child stay in their regular ed class and aren't really, are either in denial or are finding a lot of difficulty with the fact that their child may need a greater level of service.
We've got to take one more quick break, but before we do, I'm interested in your opinion. Are some school districts better than others? Without mentioning names, does it matter?
Yes, it matters what school district you're in.
So is it possible that a parent would maybe pick up the family and move to a nearby district?
People do, yes. I've actually suggested that to people before.
So some are more reasonable.
And some and some have greater resources. And are more used to dealing with certain disabilities or have maybe better programs for a certain type of a disability. Like maybe somebody has a really strong autism program and the parents are going to want to relocate to that district so that they can be in district and get that program as a result.
I want to follow up on that thought. I'm Bernie Crooks, host of Peace of Mind with Bernie the Attorney. We'll take a short break and be right back.
Unexpected medical crises can turn lives upside down. Here's Bernie Crooks from the law firm of Littman Crooks.
Barbara called. I could tell something was wrong. She was calling from the hospital. Her husband had a stroke. Harry was going to need care in a long-term facility, perhaps for the rest of his life.
Barbara couldn't find the necessary documents.
Unfortunately, this is all too common. One spouse gets sick and the other spouse has absolutely no idea where the financial records are.
Harry quickly got the care he needed. In addition to helping Barbara gather and submit the appropriate paperwork, the experts at Littman Crooks also helped access government-financed health care to help pay Harry's medical bills.
Although we can't help Harry get better, Barbara has the peace of mind of knowing their hard-earned family assets will be available to help pay for Barbara's care in the future and to pass on to their children and grandchildren and not be eaten away by the cost of Harry's long-term care.
When a medical crisis strikes, call the law offices of Littman Crooks in White Plains and Manhattan.
Peace of mind with Littman Crooks.
Call 914-684-2100.
Also located in Fishkill.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Bernie Crooks from the law firm Littman Crooks. And Gene, just before the break, Gene Lucchese, we were talking about, you know, are some school districts better than others? Can you really get a different result? And how does a parent accept that? What do they do?
It is very difficult because it may be a question of resources. I mean, it's pretty difficult to pick up your family and move, you know, one school district over even. I mean, that can be quite a burden on the family. That's a time when it would be great to get in touch with student advocacy because at least you can then perhaps maximize the program that you're getting in your district while maybe in a couple of years you can move to a district. We can help that person, make the most out of their situation because maybe the reason the parent is frustrated in that district is because they're not listening. The child really needs a better placement. Maybe they need to be placed out of district or into a BOCES program. And that's happened also in some of the districts with, you know, more challenges. People have come to us and said, you know, I want my kid placed out of that school. And I said, well, you know, this is something that we have to take baby steps toward. We need to get the documentation. We need to have the meetings. And ultimately, the decision of the Committee on Special Ed was, you know, you're right. We cannot service this child adequately here. We're going to put him in BOCES. And the parents are very happy. So they didn't have to move in that situation. They just needed good advocacy to get them to a better place.
At the end of the day, everybody should be working for what's right for the child. Right.
Absolutely.
Right. And there are different cultures in between school districts. There are some that are more punitive, for lack of a better word, or have less tolerance for behaviors, and some school districts are more willing to work with the child where they are at that point.
I don't know. If you don't have a tolerance, I'm not sure you should be in special ed. we're going to run out of time, and I want to make sure we get to a very important issue. What about getting into school? What are some of the issues in terms of access?
I'm going to just talk about one. I mean, any time a parent has trouble registering their child or if they get a letter from the school after the child is in saying that the child they don't believe the child is a legal resident, they can contact us. And this is a fairly straightforward issue to work on, actually. But the one I wanted to mention briefly, because I think people should be aware of it, is the protection under the federal McKinney-Vento Act for homeless children. This gives children a lot of protections if the family has to move to temporary housing. And I'm just going to give you a very brief example of a family I had in which the mother had moved up to Orange County. And had to face a foreclosure, unfortunately not an unusual problem right now. And her daughter, who was in high school, had been in school in Westchester, transferred to Orange County, and moved back, came to the grandmother. We were able to get her to go to school in Westchester, even though she was staying with the grandmother, because it was temporary housing under McKinney-Vento. So people need to know that that is a way that that is available for them.
You mentioned a homeless child.
Mm-hmm.
How is a child homeless?
If they're in, if they have a nighttime housing that is not adequate, regular, and fixed, it has to be all three. You can also be an unaccompanied youth, so that is not in the custody of your parent, but not for the purposes of attending the school that your district where you're living in. The child, the family has the choice then of choosing either the family they live in, that where they're living, or where they lived before they became homeless. They can choose.
What percent of your cases are homeless kids?
It's not a big percentage, but I think it's a very – I'm not positive of that number, but I get a several a year, and I think probably the other attorneys do as well.
Boy, whatever you do for them, I'm sure everybody appreciates that. Yeah. You talk about a sad story.
Right. And I had a case where in public housing – the mom was in danger of being thrown off her lease because she had two extra people in there, and one of them was a child she was trying to register in the district. And then we got the homeless liaison involved from the district, and they just put the kid in immediately.
Right. Under McKinney-Vento.
Absolutely.
Under McKinney-Vento, they cannot wait for paperwork. They have to allow them in right away while they look at the paperwork. So it's a wonderful statute that really helps families a lot.
All right, we've got to do one more piece of business. We'll take a short break. When we come back, we'll give each of you a chance to wrap up.
Okay.
Sooner or later, disability or illness strikes every family. And unfortunately, that's not the time to do the planning. The best time is in advance, before a crisis strikes.
Bernie Crooks from the law firm of Littman Crooks.
Susan, Vincent and Sheila's oldest daughter, had called us because one of her friend's parents recently had been diagnosed with Alzheimer's, and their financial affairs were a mess. They had not done any advance planning.
Susan didn't want that to happen to her parents. The caring professionals at Littman Crooks helped her design a comprehensive plan that provided for long-term care while protecting her parents' hard-earned assets.
Susan and her siblings now have the peace of mind of knowing that their parents can go on with the rest of their lives without having to worry about what would happen if one of them became sick or disabled.
Your parents had big plans for you. Make sure you have one for them. Call the law offices of Littman Crooks in White Plains and Manhattan.
Peace of mind with Littman Crooks.
Call 914-684-2100.
Also located in Fishkill.
Welcome back to the Peace of Mind with Bernie the Attorney Show. We're heard right here on WFAS AM 1230 every Thursday evening at 6.05 p.m. And next week will be our last show for 2009. We'll see you next year. And just to close up the show, Marianne, some final thoughts?
Yes, I wanted to let people who are listening know how to contact us. And we have an intake line. The phone number is 914-347-3313. That will give you the information of the times that it's open. And what will happen is once our intake person, Lois, does an intake, that person will be assigned an advocate who will discuss the matter further with him and see how much representation. Could be just technical assistance. It could be actually going to the meetings with the child. It would depend on the situation. So that is one really important way to contact us. The other is to realize that we have a website. It's www.studentadvocacy.net. We have two publications online. One is online now, which is general questions about public schools in New York. The other is going to be up and running in the new year, and that's on special ed. And that's a wonderful resource for families as well.
Fantastic. Harriet?
We also have a wonderful annual Overcoming the Odds dinner where students are their names are submitted by various school personnel throughout Westchester and Putnam. Students who have exhibited the grit to stay in school and to succeed and do well despite challenges that could be physical, emotional, medical. And so we have a selection committee. If somebody wants to call the agency and see if they can come on to the selection committee, or if somebody wants to come on to the board of the agency, they should feel free to call Lisa Siren, our executive director, and inquire about that. But the auto selection panel that's a wonderful experience. I did that myself when I was on the board at Once Upon a Time at the agency. And you read a lot of cases that are extraordinarily inspiring, and these students are recognized at our annual dinner, and they will get some monetary recognition. There might be a little grant or gift to them. And so we look forward to people submitting names, you know, guidance counselors, school personnel, CSE chairs. You know, feel free when the application comes your way.
When's the event held?
It's usually in May.
So yeah. It's coming up
yeah.
in spring.
Yeah, and also parents obviously can't refer their own child, but they could talk to the school personnel and say, I'd like you to consider referring my child.
Jean, any final thoughts?
Yeah, well, I just want to say about Otto's also. Last year, I nominated one of my students, and he was my favorite kid ever. He was a general ed student who got suspended for doing something really stupid, and he was out for quite a long time, but he came back, and he couldn't have done better when he came back, and he got an honorable mention, and he won $500. And it was about the greatest thing that ever happened to him. He and his family were so delighted, and they just had tears in his eyes when he was getting this award, and he couldn't believe he got $500, and he bought a laptop with it, and is up at, RIT now.
Well, you ladies and the rest of you at Student Advocacy are doing fantastic work, and we do appreciate it, and I appreciate you coming on the show tonight.
Thank you very much.
It's been a real pleasure to have you, and we'll see everyone next week. Good night.
Okay.
Good night.